Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
And big news, Patty, after almost 100 episodes, is being made a permanent guest on the show. We had somebody that she knows that's a friend of a friend's cousin's brother, uncle, started listening to the show from the beginning. He's now well into the series, and he notified us that we may or may not have mentioned that Patty is a permanent guest, so congratulations. First, you're on TV with CBC Television, now a permanent guest on this show that more than probably a handful of people listen to. That's big news.
I would like to correct that statement. I am not a permanent guest. I am a co-host of the Michael and Patty Show. That is why my name appears in the title.
So you want a title now?
Yes, and it's been fun, and we're getting close to our 100th episode. So go right ahead.
Which we have no clue if it's going to be anything different or not.
Yes, we haven't yet decided.
But we'll see. The Facebook group, if you haven't been there already, we do have a new Facebook group, which we created for people specifically moving to Prince Edward Island. So it's called Moving to Prince Edward Island with Michael and Patty, not to be confused with the many other groups that are out there. We have a completely different spin, and it's a safe haven where you can ask questions about PEI, living in PEI, whether it's real estate or just generalities, demographics, societal differences. What else?
Well, we also feature on there designated days for specific things. We have Toolbox Tuesdays, which are filled with information, and you could easily look back on them from items like moving with pets and school registrations and things that you need to know there, and closing days, what's involved, what should you be informed of. So there's a lot of information there. Plus, we're also recapping. And we've started back to episode one. So currently we're doing Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We are doing a little snapshot summary of each episode that we have done until we're caught up, at which time we will be featuring one a week. But just so that it's a snapshot summary of what you could expect if you decided to listen to that particular episode, with all the links as well included in there.
And we fact check. So anything that's said in the Facebook group is fact check. Like recently we had somebody indicate that tourism is down in PEI, which made absolutely no sense because I feel it's probably way up, particularly, I don't know about you, but I find there's a lot more people here from Quebec, which is awesome. And I think it's probably because they're not going to the States, down to New Hampshire or whatever. They're coming to the friendly Atlantic Canada region of the country.
And I would completely agree. The only thing I've noticed this year is we don't have as many cruise ships, it feels or seems. But tourism, there is no shortage of tourists walking up and down Charlottetown, on the roads, lots of trailers and Winnebagos. You can tell everyone, they're all here. The summer has been an absolutely beautiful summer.
And I did post the stats. Tourism is actually up and quite healthy and increasing in double digits in certain areas. Moving along, the other question on the Facebook group is what somebody said, houses are expensive in Atlantic Canada. Well, that doesn't seem to be the case because I also posted the average HPI benchmark price, which we talk about when we post and talk about the stats on the podcast. This is what an average house would cost in each province. And I'm not going to cover all of them, but I can tell you if you're in British Columbia or Ontario, you're $959,300 in BC, $804,700 in Ontario. And then down at the very bottom is Newfoundland and Labrador, $325,000, New Brunswick at $328,700. And then we sit at $378,300 for your average house on the island. So I would say that's hardly expensive considering BC's about triple that almost.
And I find the groceries in that, because they may not only be speaking of real estate costs, but just the cost of living. Yes, some items are a little bit more, but we're talking sometimes change. Just because things have to be transported over the Confederation Bridge, but pretty comparable to all other areas I've been to BC in the last year or a few times to Ontario. I don't find anything to really stand out. It seems pretty consistent.
I find that when I lived in Ontario, which I did for 29 years, you were there for decades, correct?
Correct.
I always find that I was always spending money going to events, whatever it might have been. And you'd spend a lot more money on food and entertainment than you would here.
I would probably agree. I find here, and it was also similar to my experience when I lived in Alberta many years ago, people tend to be more outdoors versus when you're in a bigger city and some of the more populated provinces, you tend to go to more events and more indoor activities, I guess. Not to say that that's the only thing they do, but I do find a lot more people here spend their days on the beach, on the trails, and enjoying the outdoors.
So when you're looking for pricing, look at the HPI that's put out by the Canadian Real Estate Association. The other thing I would look at, if you are looking at a series of houses, look at the median asking price or sale price rather than the average, because our prices do have a tendency to be willy-nilly all over the place because it's a function of emotion in a lot of cases that people are coming from other provinces, like Quebec and Ontario, BC, Alberta, and they're buying on emotion, which sometimes makes them, or it ends up costing them more money because they're not comparing what that house should be worth based on the other houses that have sold that are comparable. They didn't do a reverse CMA. Do you think that would be a good idea for someone out of province to do?
100%, which is also the benefit and the value of having your own buyer's agent representative, because the listing agent isn't going to be doing a reverse CMA on their own listing, but a buyer's agent would be able to provide that information to you.
And that's something, a CMA is a comprehensive market analysis similar to an appraisal. Typically, agents will do this at no cost, but it's also something that you could attach with an offer if you're offering less than asking price, wouldn't you say?
I have had that only a couple times in my almost 16 years of real estate done. But it definitely does hold some merit. Again, it depends on what the seller's motivation is, but it can be a powerful presentation or part of your presentation to, I guess, justify why your offer is where it is.
On another subject, I received an email this week, and someone, this was from realtor.ca, which is probably the best place to find property anywhere in Canada. And they emailed me, they said the address for this building lot is incorrect. Can you give me the proper address? What would you say to something like that when the address in this particular case was 07-14?
Well, that is the lot number, and it hasn't been in my, I'm assuming with this situation, Michael, it hadn't been assigned a civic address yet because there hasn't been a structure, a home put on it to have a civic address assigned. So the listing, whether it was yours or if it was another property they had inquired on through you, it was absolutely correct to say it is lot 07-14 and whatever the lane or the street is, plus the community. But I do find over my years, a lot of people are a little confused with that and they don't quite understand. I only don't like when, and I know we had a brief discussion about this prior to starting.
It was a heated argument.
No, it wasn't.
Paper was flying.
It was about where you will see a property, and let's just say it is located in St. Chrysostom, and they put St. Chrysostom. And you, because you've been in real estate, Michael, since the Stone Ages, had an explanation, a reason, but since I've gotten into real estate or have been in real estate, we've always been able to reference something, whether it is a lot number. And sometimes the best you can do, because there isn't an actual survey lot number for this particular acreage piece that has been subdivided off of another property, the best you can do is acreage, whatever the road name is, and then the community name. But you go right ahead, Michael, and explain that.
That just came from the old MLS systems. And we also actually, when I started, we didn't even have addresses, if you can believe that.
It's hard to believe. I can't imagine.
The civic numbers came out when I was well into my real estate career here, bizarrely enough. But just to break this down, 07-14 means that that lot was subdivided in 2007, typically, and it's lot number 14. So that's where that comes from. But you're not going to get an address until you usually get a building permit, and then they'll assign you a civic number. Moving along, I'm walking property in PEI. What tools should I be armed with so I know where this lot 07-14 is? What would the most important tool be other than your cell phone, which probably is not going to work if you're down near the water in the middle of nowhere?
Well, and I just set up, I met with clients yesterday here that are looking to purchase a piece of acreage on the island for a future retirement plan. And my first thing that I had discussed with them was, what were they using as a GPS? Now, they have their internal GPS system within their vehicle, plus they feel they have their phone as a backup, and that's fine. But I do typically say, because we do have some dead zone areas where you might lose, you know, your satellite service, to have some
cell service.
Yes, Michael. Is to have a Garmin GPS system. I have my Garmin GPS that's mounted to my windshield. I would prefer to use that so that I know I will never be without some form of direction to ensure I don't get lost. Not that it's easy to get lost on PEI, but a GPS of some form is very important. And then the next thing I did in my package was, I had taken the GPS coordinates for the location, whether it's a little bit more of an isolated piece of land and there's a right-of-way access to it, to that particular corner where you're going to be accessing or driving onto the property. But GPS coordinates are also very important so that you don't end up down some lost or an opposite area on the island because you've put in an address and it's taken you in the completely wrong direction.
There's all kinds of tools online. There is one tool that's handy. If you happen to be in an area where you do have good cellular coverage, there is a tool. I know you use it a lot more. I hardly ever use it. I just find it slow and lethargic. But basically, you bring up the app and it shows where you are, most importantly, in relativity to the property lines, and an aerial photo of that property. May it be that photo could be 10, 15 years old, who knows? But there is an app that will do that as well. Do you use that often?
Are you talking about the PEI agricultural map? Because I use that. Yes.
But the one you have on your phone when you walk around and it shows you the survey markers.
Yes, there is an app that you can use for that, and I believe that's where it's from. I think it's a great tool.
But if you don't have access to cell, or you want to be a Boy Scout and have a plan B, bring a handheld GPS. It'll be well worth it if you're looking at land.
So what else should be in your package?
What else should be in your package is a copy of the survey, ortho, or satellite photos with property lines, aerial photos. Do not trust anything but the deed. At the end of the day, the survey should be based on the deed. A plot plan would be handy if there's any buildings, structures, easements, right-of-ways. Sometimes that will all show up. And bug spray and mosquito netting.
Yes, you'll need...
And a shotgun.
I actually didn't recommend that to my clients yesterday, but we've had such a... There's been such a nice breeze that's probably not going to be problematic. There are some that are going to be a little bit more treed that they may experience that. The other thing that I would recommend, so if you're an agent listening to this and you're taking some notes as to what you should be putting in, I always call it a Powerhouse Patty self-guided tour, where I get a map of Prince Edward Island. I put all the little markers to show where these properties are in relation to other communities, so that they're not only relying on their phone and trying to zoom in and zoom out. I feel that's great, a great tool, and just kind of a nice little thing that they can use back at their hotel or their cottage to look at and map out maybe their day the next day. But also the Schedule A of a deed, because that will end up giving them more information about right-of-ways, and that if you are not able to get access to an actual printed survey. So Schedule A, most properties, as long as they're after approximately 1997 to 1998, 99, we should be able to gain access to them and easily able to print that Schedule A, the written version, off of the deed for that particular property, so they can reference that as well.
The Schedule A basically just gives you a list of things to follow, including measurements, and it tells you, starting at this corner, we're going to traverse this many feet, or some of the older ones I'm sure you've probably seen are in chains.
Yes.
And links, and you will have to convert that. I think what chain is, what, 66 feet?
Yes.
So that's what we're going to bring with us. And the other thing is, if you're looking at really low-priced acreage that's waterfront, probably bring a pair of rubber boots or better yet, hip waders.
Yeah. Because
you'll be up to your waist in water.
So I have a question for you. If someone's coming to the island to look at land, do you show them the land?
From my office via satellite photo, absolutely.
I just find it, so when I sat down with my clients yesterday, and I told them, I said, some pieces of land, I don't need you stressed out because I have this all structured out that we have to hit this, this, and this one because I've got designated 4 hours, 5 hours, if it's 8 hours, to spend with you to go through all these, to walk these properties versus... You guys can freely do this on your own. There might be one property where you rule it out, just, we don't like it, we don't like the setting. And then the next property, you might actually want to take some time and maybe just explore a little bit. You're not on someone else's schedule. You're on your time, and you get to do some sightseeing. I made sure that I gave them a few things to do because they did have their children with them, a few things to do at each location, or just venture over here, just to kind of experience some of the tourist attractions or some sightseeing opportunities that they may not have necessarily been able to do if I was sitting there going, okay, well, we've seen this property, let's get on to the next one.
The only caveat to that, or the only challenge to that I find, is if they're looking at property that has neighbors around it, inevitably, if they're not with an agent, the neighbors pop out of their houses like a cuckoo bird and tell them 100 different reasons why they shouldn't buy this property that's directly in front of their property, which is going to block their views if they build a house.
Yes.
I have one of those now, and every single time someone views it, the neighbors come over and tell them it's on a floodplain and there's nuclear waste buried there and they can hear the windmills even though they're 50 miles away. When you're looking at land, in all seriousness, it can take a couple seconds to look at it and say, this is not for me. I've also taken 3 and 4 hours to walk a 100, 200 acre parcel. So it doesn't really, it's not an advantage really to have an agent with you. Although I have seen agents, I remember years ago, there was an agent showing a building lot at 8 o'clock at night, which to me was complete insanity. What are you going to do showing a quarter acre building lot? Point to it. Here's the lot.
Yeah, I just have not been. In my early years, I would, but it's not something I typically do today. Now, if we're looking at some residential properties and there's a piece of land that they also want to make sure that they get to visit, of course I fit that in. But in this instance, you know, these guys are here for a week. They're on vacation. They can look at as many as they want a day. They can decide this is the property we want and we don't need to look at the other ones. Whatever their decision is, it's entirely up to them, and they don't have the stress of having me tagging along.
So if you're looking to look at raw land, acreage, building lots, request the Powerhouse Patty self-guided tour.
I think we gave all the tools that anyone that's listening, if you are a realtor, that's what we put together for our clients.
A few years ago, I offered them a house. It was a nice house in Charlottetown, and I ran away from it after I had the home inspection done because they had Kitech plumbing that was essentially buried behind cabinetry in the basement. They had in-floor heating. And the reason I ran away from this house, and I bring this up because it's for sale once again, is because it had Kitech. And do you know what Kitech is? K-I-T-E-C?
It's a type of plumbing that has connectors that was used around is at the mid-1995 to 2007. Thank you, Michael. In homes built during that time period. But there's these connectors, and it's not a matter of if they're going to break or give way. It's a matter of when. And that's the issue with them.
And the challenge is when you have a house that has Chi-Tech in it and the house is finished, you don't know, is the entire house Chi-Tech? Was this a renovation? Is it in the walls? Is it in the ceiling? In this case, it was in the floors. So what can happen with Chi-Tech, which Patty named correctly, it came out, it was manufactured between 1995 and 2007, although installed into the early 2010s in some places. It's marketed as a cheaper, easy-to-install alternative to copper. What can happen is premature failure. And this is a nice word, de-zincification.
Wow.
Brass fittings lose zinc over time, causing weakness, leaks, and blockages. Burst pipes, that's what I would worry about in floor heating. Maybe your pipes will explode in your floor, and then you've got a built-in swimming pool at no extra cost. Temperature limits, poor resistance to hot water above 170 Fahrenheit or 77 Celsius, leading to accelerated breakdown. Insurance problems. So the insurance companies may not want to insure that house, and rightfully so. Resale impact. Well, that's interesting they bring that up, because this particular case, these people are desperate to sell the house, but my home inspector happened to find the Chi-Tech, and I couldn't run fast enough back to my car to avoid buying it.
Mm-hmm.
And replacement cost. They're saying the full replacement can be $5,000 to $15,000 plus. I would probably say that's pretty minimal based on today's costs. So that is Chi-Tech. You can research that on Google, Patty.
Yeah, well, I was going to say there, I do know there's a plumber in Summerside, and he actually owns a home that has Chi-Tech plumbing. He doesn't see it as being an issue. And I'm sure there's many.
And why is that?
Well, because he could probably fix it. I don't reduce cost.
Because he probably installed most of it in the city, and they're not going to admit I installed defective plumbing. I had the same thing happen to me with another plumber. They said, oh, no, there's nothing wrong with it. It's in my house. What are they going to say? You just bought a building that's stuffed with Chi-Tech. It's just, if you have the ability to not buy a property with Chi-Tech, or you have the ability to replace it and you understand what that cost is going to be, you definitely want to look into that.
Yeah, all we're saying is just to be aware while you're going through and doing your due diligence to factor that in. It's no different if you're going to buy a house and you know the roof needs to be reshingled or replaced, or you will need to factor in the replacement or the repair cost. And that is one item that could possibly end up coming up. And the other thing is, if you were fortunate enough to have owned a home that has Chi-Tech plumbing and you've not ran into any issues, like Michael said, the home that you were looking to offer on, Michael, because of the Chi-Tech, it caused you to go in a different direction. You may be the one left holding the cards at the time when somebody else now is, and they're more knowledgeable, they're more educated in this, and you might have to reduce the cost of your price offered on the market as a result of having Chi-Tech. So it might seem fine today to get into, but it might not be the easiest to get out of later on.
Last week, I received an email, and I've had many, many of these. This particular person, their words used, are there any glaring issues with the property? And they indicated the property had been on the market for some time. I looked at the listing, came to the conclusion that number one, the property was on the market for almost a year, but it was also at a much higher price. So these people were testing the market. That didn't work. They reduced the price down to market. Now they're getting lots of showings and interest and two parties I want to offer subject to viewing. But with them asking, you know, are there any glaring issues? Number one, to have a property on the market for a few months in PEI is not a big deal. I was watching the news the other day, and it was an agent in Vancouver talking about how hard of a life they have with the condo market in Vancouver, because sometimes properties are sitting on, are you sitting down, for 30, 40 days. Can you imagine the hardship?
Yeah, that doesn't seem like hardship at all. That's a good market.
They're complaining that it might take, I think the number was 47 days to sell a condo, up from 38 or something. What a tough life. I couldn't believe the hardship these people have to go through. In PEI, it's nothing to have a house on the market for a year. So when you look at realtor.ca, which tells you days on market, and it says 200, 300, 400 days, chances are it's probably overpriced or it's in a rural area, but it doesn't mean there's any deficits. To further this, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, or the particulars of the property. It could be a two-bedroom, one bath.
Right, a rural.
Or a rural property, the location, it's a little more isolated. So now you're looking for somebody like the current owner who wants that kind of setting or that kind of lifestyle or product.
Or someone escaping from the law.
There are areas that I could recommend.
But to email the listing agent and think that the listing agent is going to point out a bunch of negatives about the property, they work for the seller. And if you were selling your house and you're in the market for an exponentially long time, you want to think that it's not because your agent is giving potential buyers a list of negatives about the property.
I agree. And not that I have had seller clients in the past, many years ago, test, and either they would have a family member or a friend call me to see what it was that I was saying and answering questions, which they ended up admitting to me. And I thought, ooh, okay, I like a challenge. I don't fail tests. And so be mindful of that. Or if you're questioning as a seller, what is my agent saying about my property? You might want to just get somebody to make a phone call, ask a few probing questions just to make sure, because we can only say what we have been approved to say by the seller. Why are they looking to sell? Well, that should be a conversation that if you're a seller, you should have with your agent and say, I don't want anyone to know that I'm going through a divorce or this is my situation. Just tell them I'm looking to relocate. And that's all that we are allowed to say. It's not about hiding information about the property or anything like that. It's we just don't disclose or give away our clients' positions or personal life.
And as a listing agent, if I call you up and I ask you if the price is flexible, what have we learned on the podcast to respond with?
Of course it's flexible. If you want to give an at or above list price offer, my client would be more than happy to take a look at that.
Well done, Patty. And this leads into the next topic. So they're calling me, they're asking me to point all the negatives out with the property. I recommended they had their own representation. I referred them to another agent that represents a lot of buyers. It's absolutely fantastic. Her name is Trisha.
Oh, did you? Okay.
And just to give her a shout out, and it turns out they had their own agent. So, of course, the question was, so why are you pestering the listing agent? So their response was, well, we didn't want to bother our buyer's agent to see the house, so we thought we would call the listing agent, which completely negates the whole concept of having your own representation. It would be like going through a divorce and saying, well, I thought I'd save a few bucks here on a lawyer, so I'm going to use my wife's lawyer to fight me.
Yeah, and if it's a good listing agent, they'll know what questions to ask you during the whole showing process or discussion on the phone to ensure that they are helping posture and position their client in the best possible position to negotiate with you should that be a property that you want to end up offering on. So you should only be going through your realtor and having your realtor represent you and have the conversation and discussion with the listing agent. They know what they're doing. They're mostly, you know, most agents are pretty good, well-trained. They know how to keep their cards held. A buyer's agent, they'll do a CMA or reverse CMA to help you. A listing agent isn't going to do that against their client because it's between themselves and their client that they've set the price on this property. So it's best to have your own representation and that filter. You need that conversation filter in between the agents because, again, buyer's agents representing the buyers, selling agents representing the seller.
And the buyer's agent, if they know the area and they should be a specialist in that area and then in that type of real estate that you're buying, may it be a house, condo, farm, acreage, building lot, waterfront, whatever, they would be able to tell you things like, you don't want to buy this house because it's beyond X street. Have you ever been in a city and there's that one street that if you go beyond, nobody wants to buy a house there?
Well, if they don't know the layout of the land.
Or you're in a city and you look at a part of the city, you think, oh, this is nice, quaint little houses. This is awesome. Little to know that it's crime central and you can't give away a house to save your life.
Yeah, it may seem like a deal, but sometimes you have to wonder why too. The other thing is, I was just going to say, for the listeners who may not know, our rules and regulations, and I'll just reference the number in case anyone wants to fact check me, it is 13.8 of our rules and regulations. And what it states is, before a member may complete an agreement of purchase and sale, that member should, where possible, physically view the property. So if you're a buyer and you're thinking you're saving your agent some time, they technically, as per our rules and regulations, would have to go back out there. In most cases, they don't have to, but it does say should, where possible, go and view that property anyway. So it's best that they view it with you.
Well, the other thing is, if you're paying a buyer's rep in one way or another, whether they're being paid directly from the buyer or from the vendors in the form of a commission, they should be doing their due diligence on that property because there could be certain things that are obvious to them that aren't obvious to the purchaser. For instance, a week or so we ran into a situation where the neighbor had constructed a giant wooden fence.
Yes.
You went out there and you investigated because you had some concerns as to whether or not they had the property line surveyed, because in a lot of cases they don't, and they had cut down shrubbery or plant growth. So luckily, you went out there, you discovered the property was indeed surveyed, their fence was absolutely beautiful, very impressive.
And it was within their property, there was almost a foot buffer from where the survey marker property line was, they put it inside their property. So, and they were very respectful, yes, it does need some grass eventually, we'll all end up growing up there probably by next year. But 100%. I mean, that a listing agent or your buyer's agent, we know what to look for depending on the situation or circumstances.
And that's just one example. Other examples might be Kitech plumbing, or maybe there's a wood stove that you realize they're not going to get insurance for, or there's other problems. The neighbor has their shed located on the property, or the buyer's agents looked at the deed and realized, I looked at a cottage the other day, well, there's a right-of-way right across their front lawn for the farmer. So you're sitting on your front deck, drinking a beer, having a great day. Next thing you know, there's a giant Massey Ferguson tractor driving across your front lawn, which is just newly seeded, but was completely unaware of the right-of-way. So these are things the buyer's agent can protect you from, but do not contact the listing agent if you're a buyer unless you're unrepresented and maybe you're looking for representation.
And if it's the only property, this is the only property I'm interested in. It's been on the market. I'm fondly flew in. I don't have representation. I just want to call the listing agent. I want to make this all smooth because I know many just, that's what they want to do. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But if you're going to be looking at a bunch of properties and that, and you want to have the opportunity to negotiate, we are not allowed as a listing agent under our agency, under agency law. We can't negotiate on price. We become a facilitator. So
if you're representing both sides and they've signed documentation to acknowledge that.
Yeah. Well, as soon as you end up representing both sides, because you have privileged information, it's called limited dual agency. So we can't go back and forth, if you can imagine, and say to the seller, hey, I think we can get these guys up a little bit more, and then go to the buyer and say, yeah, I would stay firm here. We might be able to get them down, or, and you can't play both sides. You can have conversations about closings and conditions and all of that. But when it comes to price, if you're looking for representation to negotiate the best price for you, going with the same agent, the listing agent, they're not able to. Again, we become a facilitator and that's all we are allowed to do.
I'm buying a house, Patty. One of the common questions I would have is, what are the closing costs? And tell me about the Powerhouse Realty Buyer's Guide, which I took and edited and put my own name on it. Now it's Michael's Buyer's Guide.
Yeah, that's pretty
funny.
Deleted
your picture.
I just got asked this week, what kind of closing costs could I expect as part of my purchase and sale? Closing costs don't just start at closing. They start right on the onset of entering into a contractual agreement with a seller. They start with home inspections. Home inspections can range anywhere from $500 to $750 to $800, depending on the property. Septic inspections, again, those are $300 to $500 you could be looking at. So depending on what kind of inspections and that you're looking to have done, each of them will come with a cost. A foundation expert's going to charge you. Those all become part of your closing costs. At closing, there'll be an adjustment on property taxes. So as the seller overpaid, your lawyers, which is why you need legal representation. I have had over the years a buyer client assume that why do I need a lawyer? Or a seller assuming, why do I need a legal representation? They'll look after all the nitty-gritty things like this. So closing costs could be, are property taxes owed back to the seller, or does the seller have to pay their property taxes or catch it up all the way to whatever that closing date? So they make it on a prorated basis by day to determine what that number is. Top-up fuels, part of closing costs you'll be purchasing if the fuel source for the heat in a home is oil or propane, the seller is responsible to top up the tanks. And the buyer will be purchasing, if it's within your contract agreement that there is a fuel adjustment clause, will be responsible for the cost of a full tank of oil or a full tank of propane. The sellers are responsible for the water test, typically, unless it says otherwise within your contract agreement, so you don't have those costs. And then you're getting into the legal component of it, the costs. Deed registration, if you have a mortgage, you're looking at approximately $500 to register your mortgage. You're looking at about the same to register your name. These are all things that your lawyer looks after. The legal fees, those could vary anywhere from around $1,500 to $2,500, depending on the lawyer and the situation with the property and the title search and everything's involved with that. What else would there be, Michael?
Inspections could be a large list depending on what you're looking at. If you're looking at a house that's really, really old, and for instance, the furnace looks like it's something that's been raised from the bottom of the ocean that was heating the Titanic.
Yes.
That might be someone, you might want to have somebody come in from Irving or one of the fuel companies to quote you on a new furnace or inspect the existing one. Electrical systems, you look at the main breaker panel and it's all those screw-in glass fuses. Insurance companies don't like that because they can be a fire hazard. Remember stuffing pennies behind them when they would blow so they would never blow again? They just
yes.
Burn your whole house down. So electrical inspections, plumbing inspections. We talked about Kitech. Roofing. Maybe the roofing is questionable. You will see NPEI. Have you ever seen that moss that always grows on the north side of the roof? And people say, oh, it needs a new roof. It doesn't really need a new roof. It just needs the moss removed in a lot of cases.
Yes.
So you may want to have a roofing guy drop by. Any renovations? Maybe you want to add, I don't know, an outhouse.
Sure.
Get a quote on that. Driveway is questionable. Get a quote on the driveway or resealing it if it's not completely dead. The other thing that we should mention is deposits. You mentioned the other day that the electrical was looking for higher deposits now?
Electrical looking for higher deposits. I'm not.
When you get services, whatever they may be, they may require a deposit, particularly with electrical. You're dealing with Maritime Electric, or if you're in Summerside, You most likely are on the City of Summerside electrical, except in some fringe areas, which would be Maritime Electric. They may require a deposit.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're new to their service, we have Maritime Electric or City of Summerside. They will probably request, again, if you're new to the island, a deposit that they will hold just to make sure that you don't default and they've got a little bit of security there. Other things that you could expect is your title insurance, which is highly recommended, and that can vary a couple hundred dollars. What will determine how high your title insurance could be is if there's a plot plan or if there's not a plot plan. If there's a plot plan in place that shows, it's not the survey, it shows where the structures are that are sitting on that piece of land, typically you can end up paying a lesser amount for your title insurance versus if there is not a plot plan in place, and then your land transfer tax. So if you've owned a property anywhere on the planet, land transfer tax here on Prince Edward Island is 1% of the purchase price. So that's what makes up, I think, pretty much in a nutshell, what you could expect as part of your closing costs.
Well, the other thing is the insurance is going to cost you money, and they may want those monies up front or monthly.
Yes.
And if you did want to order a survey or a plot plan, assuming you could get one done expediently or quickly enough prior to closing, that would also be considered, I would say, a major expense, because you could be into thousands of dollars depending on the configuration and the size of the property and whether it's treed or not treed, the ease of the surveyor actually surveying it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things to consider. Patty does have a guide that she can share with you. I've also taken hers, edited, put my name on it, and I can share that as well. And I think that's about it, Patty.
Yeah, the powerhouse guide that we have just takes, we have a buyers and sellers, takes you right from, and I mean, sometimes you can Google these things and find, you know, simpler versions of them, but it's something that I'd worked on since after I've been in real estate for a few years and I started to know what the heck I was doing, started to put together right from thinking of buying all the way to closing and after, and the same thing with selling. So just something that's got a little bit high value. Well, there's a lot of value to these resource tools, but just ask your agent because they probably have something very similar to it, and hopefully that helps you. Thanks again for listening to another episode of The Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, PEI's podcast that helps guide and navigate you through the buying and selling of PEI real estate, and sometimes just some fun facts and information about Prince Edward Island. We appreciate each and every one of you for downloading and listening to us every week. And yeah, have a great summer.
Be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel if you're listening to it on YouTube. If you're listening to it on one of your many podcast platforms, be sure to subscribe or follow. Give us a 5-star rating, some feedback, and if you have any questions about Prince Edward Island real estate or PEI in general, be sure to send them to Patty and I, and we will address them. Have a great day. Thanks again for listening.
Thanks for listening.